The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
Since Chauncey has so much credibility in everybody's eyes, he's always misinterpreted because everyone thinks there's a deeper insight behind everything he says. Yeah. If someone projects into you something, how they hear you will depend on what they've already projected into you. We interpret in order to keep a reality of the person we believe we see. If you look inside, you'll figure it out for yourself. If you think I or anyone else can give you the answer, then you'll get stuck in the Chauncey Gardners of the world, only to realize that actually they didn't really know the thing you projected into them. But you were too scared or insecure to find that in yourself.
It's a wonderful chaos, beautifully random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest, we fight to find peace, both head and the heart.
Show
where the more that you learn is the less that you know, where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way.
It's a wonderful chaos.
It is a totally wonderful chaos today.
It's a wonderful chaos.
Oh, it's a wonderful. So basically today, Bambos, we are discussing, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best films of all time.
And you picked this subject, Andy, because you didn't know what else to talk about with me.
You know what? I was booking out ahead in the LA, and I thought, we got to do a story, and I don't know what to do. And I thought, you know what? Being there is one of these movies that had such an impact on me at a young age. And it was only as I got older, I realized there were all these themes in it that I understood better as an adult.
And you'll be proud to know, Andy, I've watched the movie too.
Hold on, hold on. And we're going to do that on
A Wonderful Chaos, Andy. So Friday evening, I watched the movie with Yasmine, 2 hours of it.
You watched 2 hours.
2 hours of it.
That's how long the movie is. Like,
okay.
And
what was your conclusion?
I came prepared. I made notes.
Okay, Bambos, but I asked you, you watched a movie for 2 hours. Yeah. And just state quickly, what did you feel when you saw the movie?
Trump.
You felt Trump. Yeah, obviously.
White privilege.
White privilege. Yes, those are the themes. But is there anything, did you like it or dislike it?
You know, for those
answer it. Did you like it or dislike it?
I didn't like it.
That's what I said, Bambos. I wrote it down before you got in. This is the first time I made a prediction on the show. I didn't like it. That's
and they like it that way.
I knew you would not like it. I just knew before you said a word. I knew. But
it's an old movie.
Yes.
Like the humor is for those days funny, but it wasn't funny.
Okay, but let's get into it, right? Let me read the synopsis. So for those who have not seen the film Being There was filmed in 1979. It was Peter Sellers' last film. And if you know Peter Sellers, right? Peter Sellers was Jacques Cousteau and he did the Pink Panther. Hal Ashby, who is the director of this movie, I learned was kind of a drug addict, had his own sort of things. He made a film called Shampoo that was cult-like movies. Basically, let me read a little bit about this film just so for those who have not had anything. If you haven't seen the movie, there will be only spoilers. So don't listen to this if you do want to see the movie. And here it is. So a middle-aged, simple-minded Chance lives in this townhouse of a wealthy old man in Washington, D.C. He spent his whole life tending the garden and has never left the property. Other than gardening, his knowledge is derived entirely from what he sees on television. When his benefactor dies, Chance naively tells the lawyers that he has no claim against the estate and he's ordered to move out. Chance wanders aimlessly, discovering the outside world for the first time. Passing by a TV shop, he sees himself captured on a camera in the shop window. Entranced, he steps backwards off the sidewalk and struck by a chauffeured car owned by our elderly business mogul, Ben Rand. In the car, Rand's much younger wife, Eve, who mishears Chance the Gardener in reply to the question, who is he? Chauncey Gardener. Eve brings Chance to their home to recover. He's wearing expensive tailored clothes from the 20s and 30s, which is the benefactor who had allowed him to take from the attic. And his manners are old-fashioned and courtly. When Ben Rand meets him, he takes Chauncey for the upper-class, highly educated businessman who's fallen on hard times. Rand admires him, finding him direct, wise, and insightful. Rand is also confident and the advisor to the President of the United States, whom he introduces to Chauncey. In a discussion about the economy, Chance takes his cue from the words stimulation growth and talks about changing seasons of the garden. The president misrepresents this as optimistic political advice and quotes Chauncey Gardner in a speech. Chance now rises to national prominence, attends important dinners, develops a close, detailed advice about what a serious gardener should do to do is misunderstood as his opinions on what would be his presidential policy. So for me, this film at a very young age, first of all, you might watch it and not even know you're watching a comedy.
Yeah.
Like you could watch a movie. It may be one of the most nuanced comedies that I'd ever seen because it's half the public watching it would say, this isn't funny. As you did.
Oh, I found it funny. Okay. I just didn't laugh. I could see the humor, but it wasn't touching me because there was a reality there.
Okay.
Which was creeping up in me and it just made me very, very nervous.
Ah, yeah.
It made me very, like even anxious actually to like watching this movie. I just thought, fuck, anyone could be, any white privileged middle-aged guy can be a Chance.
Yes. Yes. And that, and by the way, the themes that you've come up with, we haven't discussed this. So there's words you use, but I've come to those same words myself in it, which is nice that independently we've had a similar experience with the movie.
It's because I'm reading your book over and over, so you're rubbing onto me.
Of course. We have Iris, just to make sure. I read the book when I was very young and was astounded by it. I later saw the film and think that in the book, his character was even more simpleton.
I mean, even the actor that was playing the Chance, what's his name again?
Peter Sellers.
He said, he actually says, in real life, I'm a nobody. So for him to play this role was very easy.
So the thing that I thought would be nice is that I did what I don't normally do. I watched the movie and then I picked out clips that for me were important or relevant. And I thought, you know what, let's look at these clips. And then what we'll do is we'll discuss a little bit about them and then how they lead to a lot of our show content. Because if anyone watches our show, in the back of my mind, I have Chauncey Gardner in my head. Like I see him tied to every show we do.
Oh God, please no.
Exactly. And you, and I, the guru shows, the enlightenment shows, the being quiet shows, active listening shows, like projection reclamation work, all of it is in this film. And I've seen it all the time. I saw it at a young age. And so that's why the movie is so, it's so, it blew my mind then. And it even blows it more now today.
Show us a clip, Andy.
Okay. Well, before we do, like I'm going to show some clips, but the clips we're going to show is to set up the movie for those who haven't seen it. We're just going to set it up. The first scene we're going to look at is just so people understand when we say he's simple, what we mean by simple. This is where Chance the Gardener is told that his benefactors died. And the woman who takes care of him is sharing the news with him. And it just gives you an idea of who and what this character is all about. So this is where Chance the Gardener is told by the basically woman who's the caretaker of the house that the benefactor has died.
Good morning, Louise.
Just one of us.
He's dead, Chance.
Well,
The old man's dead.
I see.
He wasn't breathing and as cold as a fish.
Oh, well.
I touched him just to see.
I came to see your drawing.
Chance?
Well, you sure you could spare the time? I'm surprised you had any time at all.
And I cover him up. Pull the sheet over his head.
Big deal. Nobody looks at anything of mine. Oh,
Big Bird. Lord.
That baby has taken
what a morning.
Yes, Louise. It looks like it's going to snow. Have you seen the garden? It feels just like it's going to snow.
Damn it, boy.
But I love you too.
Is that all you got to say?
Well, I do. That's the way it works. See, you can love.
That old man is lying up there. Dead as hell.
Dead as hell, Andy.
So basically, think about this for a moment. Like, everyone in the world has become Chance in some ways. Like, he lives through the TV set. This is not, no, there was no mobile phone going on at this time. And he is so absorbed in TV. He's never left the house that his entire experience of life is through this box. And if you look at our lives today, it's not all that different. I mean, if you look at a kid who is raised, they look at the screen on their phone. And that screen becomes basically their vision to the world and the prejudices on all the things you're being influenced by that you're not even aware of.
Nice.
And so when I see that scene and why I think it's so funny is you get a sense of how simple he is. He's just been told that the person who he's been raised with his entire life from a child, the benefactor who he took him under his wing and let him do the gardening in his house is now dead. And his reaction is, oh, it may snow. And that gives you, like, for me, an example of that. Yeah. And so my question to you is, so when you say that the film didn't get you and I'm trying to, I'm sharing all of my experiences of it. What is it that you feel like wasn't necessarily capturing you? Like, what is it that didn't pull you in? What was it you would have wanted to have seen or seen more or less of?
I think there were parts of the movie that I feel didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But if I talk about them, then it's like some of the intimate scenes with the woman.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel they actually made any sense as opposed to the actual story itself.
Okay. But just in to share with you from my perspective, those scenes may or may not have been there, but they slavishly did a gag maybe that was he when she came in for those who again we won't have a scene for this, but when she came into his bedroom to want to have sex with him, he's watching The Crown Affair, which is an old film where the people are kissing on the TV.
Mm.
And because they're kissing on the TV, he now knows what kissing is. So he kisses her because he says, hey, this is what kissing is. So in a weird way, the only reason why he kisses her is because he now sees what the TV shows him. And then when that scene ends, he stops kissing her.
Yeah.
So the absurdity of only being able to do the thing that, and then you remember the line that's probably one of the best lines that I think ever in any movie.
I'm waiting.
Is afterwards, she now wants to, of course, continue what happened. And he looks at her and he says, I like to watch. So the fact that in a way Chauncey, and this is we'll get into this as we discuss this, since Chauncey has so much credibility in everybody's eyes, he's always misinterpreted. Because everyone thinks there's a deeper insight behind everything he says.
Yeah.
And this is what I've often told you in our life is that if someone projects into you something, how they hear you will depend on what they've already projected into you. So since he was projected as being insightful, all of a sudden people interpreted everything he said as insightful or as nuanced. So he says, I like to watch. What does she do? She goes and masturbates in front of him because she makes the assumption he's not saying I like to watch TV. She thinks he's saying I like to watch you pleasure yourself. And that's, for me, the beauty of watching a film like this is that you see in my mind as well how often we interpret in order to keep a reality of the person we believe we see. And we stretch that really far a lot of times. Like when we romanticize or we make someone into an idol, we stretch it very, very far. Yeah. So nice. that gets to that the reason why that scene and the scene with her was also for me important. That gag, as it were, or that way of the thing that they try to do over and over again in the film, what I think they did so well. Bolalong sends us a question here.
Why is Chance not moved by the death of the old man like he was by that of Benjamin Rand, another old man?
And this is a very so in the film, there's two deaths, the one of his predecessor and the one afterwards. Because we're doing this show, Bolalong, I watched I read through the Wikipedia, and what I heard was they debated on whether to have him have emotions at the end, because they say he was out of character with who he was at the beginning of the film. So I don't know if Hal Ashby was the director. I think it was he or Sellers said they didn't like doing it because they felt like it broke the character of Chance the Gardener, or Chauncey Gardner, who he was made into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree, Bolalong. It's a very, very funny point, and it was a big issue for them in the filming.
Like, let's get one thing straight.
Yeah.
It was a nice movie, but it wouldn't be a movie I would want to watch again.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, after 10 minutes, this is really bad, I'm going to turn it off.
Nah, yeah.
I watched it. I could get the substance of it.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be like, wow, amazing, let's watch this again and again. Like,
yeah,
it really nourishes my soul. No, I didn't like it in that way.
Yeah,
but definitely it's a very intelligent movie.
Yeah,
very subtle.
Yeah, you have an internal dialogue during the movie. It's a more subtle. So let's,
if you want to think, there's a movie that makes you think.
Yeah, it makes you think for sure.
This is not like I'm going to relax with my lover and watch a movie. No.
Let's go. Before we get into the more meta level appreciation, we're going to just set it up because some people won't have seen the film. Chance the Gardener is thrown out of the house and he's walking the streets in his benefactor suit. Mm-hmm. And he sees a TV set for the first time outside and he sees himself on it, which blows his mind. So this is how circumstance take him from being thrown out of the one house to now being pulled into the next house of Ben Rand.
So he doesn't make any claims.
Yeah. Exactly. He doesn't make any claims. And that's, again, one of these, that's the whole thing. The whole gag is that, and this is why the movie was so interesting, because when we'll talk about enlightenment, we'll often discuss this, taking things back to their base elements, where we no longer project meaning into anything. It just is. There's an isness to things. And if you look at it, you would say being more like Chance is what one would actually call enlightenment. One may call enlightenment, will be more broad in term. So you might say, this is what an enlightened being looks like. They're just present, and it is the isness of things is now there. And I think that's just fascinating when you think about it, that we talk about returning back to it being simple is often the way to be. And therefore, when you look at a character and they are simple, then how is it that that person then becomes projected on as being enlightened? And that's what happens in this movie.
White privilege.
That gets to another point into the projection work, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like you've said so many times, that he's wearing expensive clothing from companies which don't exist anymore, but they were. It's like a brand.
Yeah.
And he's white. He's talking in a very simplistic way, so you can project onto it. So all of a sudden, he's an entity.
Yeah.
Right?
He's an entity. And it's not all that dissimilar sometimes from our talks. You remember our statement some time ago when Ronnie wanted to hire you, but she couldn't because you had those big earrings in. And
tunnels. I had big tunnels, guys.
Are they called tunnels?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know the word of these things. But Ronnie... Ronnie would have loved to, but she's like, I can't bring him in if he doesn't represent at least some status of where I can, like, let's say if you screwed up, that they said you could have told just by looking at his ears that he wasn't going to be able to, you know, or whatever. Yes. And this is very similar. You know, he wore a suit and the suit was tailored from, you know, the 20s and 30s, but in some weird way, the fact that people say, wow, this must be someone important because clearly the clothes he's wearing reflects that.
Yeah.
And that's, again, that whole idea of the first impression. And we'll discuss that a lot on a show. Like when we introduce somebody, like I'll always be clear, we're going to share what it is that makes a person special or interesting, because if we don't start with that, people won't know why they're going to listen.
Exactly.
And that's similar to in this case. So Chance now gets in the car with the wife of Ben Round, who's played by Shirley MacLaine, I think that was the actress. And she hears him say, "My name is Chance the Gardener," and she creates that into Chancey Gardener. So from that moment forward, he's Chancey Gardener, which is far more instead of Chance the Gardener. And now this gets into an interesting one, and I start now from this point forward discussing the topics that I've seen really absorbing a lot of our time together, right? And the topic that one we've discussed on so many shows, and I think we've even done, was the one of projections and assumptions. Mm. And projection and assumption is one of these core topics of everything that we discuss. We've already discussed it a bit on this show. So I wanted to show, and there's so many examples of this in this film that it's hard to take one, but this is just one of these examples of the projection and assumptions that are made. And this is after Peter Sellers, who's Chauncey Gardner, we'll call him that now, is at the house. He's having dinner with Ben Rand and his wife, and this is the discussion that happens as they're discussing at the table.
So then, what are your plans, Chauncey?
Well, I would like to work in your garden.
Oh, Ben, I know exactly what he means. Isn't it wonderful to be with the trees and the flowers like that?
Yeah. I never had much feel for it myself.
I'm a very good gardener.
It's such a pleasant way to forget one's troubles.
Yeah, well, isn't that what any businessman is? A gardener. He works on flinty soil to make it productive with the labor of his own hands. He waters it with the sweat of his own brow. Who makes a thing of value for his family and for the community. He is indeed, Chauncey. A productive businessman is a laborer in the vineyard.
I know exactly what you mean, Ben. The garden that I left was such a place.
Yes. And that's for me is when I've seen people project onto a person, if they say simple things and leave the space there, then basically the others will take that space and interpret into it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the way that Chance was continually there were so many examples of this in the film. I realized there were at least 30 of them. Like he when he went into the elevator and then he said, "This is a small room."
Yeah. So there's a kind of naivety to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the guy that was rolling his stool brought him back into the same small room. And then the guy rolling his stool laughed and he said, "Excuse me, sir, I'm laughing because of your comment, your joke about the small room." And then he doesn't understand that was a joke because it really was a small room for him. He didn't understand it was an elevator. And it was kind of what I also found nice about the film is that the people that were projecting less on him began to understand that he was simple. Like the doctor in the film. So he projected less onto him, and therefore it was easier to see, wow, he's just simple. He's not insightful. He's just simple. But the people that projected more on him were less capable of seeing that because they were trying to interpret everything as having more meaning.
Grandiose.
Yeah.
And eventually managed to also sway the doctor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't sway the doctor. The doctor saw in the end of the movie, he knew that Chance was just a gardener, not Chauncey Gardener.
Oh, yeah. He.
And yet.
He investigated.
He found out that Chance was actually a gardener. He wasn't Chauncey Gardner, but Chance the Gardener. And he didn't say anything to Ben Rand right before he died because Ben was getting so much solace from having him there. Mm. So he even saw that this man who's simple is actually helping a man who is one of the, say, wealthiest people in the world, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the fascination, was how do you make peace with the idea that, wow, he's actually with a man, this person who's supposedly had all this success is now getting advice from someone who's never left their house.
And watched TV.
And only watched TV their whole life. So yeah, that was that. By the way, I think you may have seen, I don't know if you saw, but there were a lot of articles recently showing the similarity between this film and the rise of Trump. Did you see any of those art? So you made that connection, but this is a well-known thing on the internet right now.
Oh, I thought you summarized that.
No. This is actually, when they talked about the rise of Trump in light of this film, they said no more did they in 1979 see the future of a person like Trump at that point. And this film shows how incredibly insightful they were at that time. I mean, you could see it. You saw it yourself, of course.
Also how politicians speak.
Yeah.
And leaving a lot open and not really closing anything or being very concrete, or like you can't hook them on anything.
Yeah.
When the black woman was watching Chauncey on TV.
Yeah.
And she said he's as dumb as a whatever.
Yeah.
Like, because I've been reading a lot on white privilege and slavery, that touched me the most out of all the movie. Like, that was a reality that was hard to swallow.
Yeah. Kirk Scott writes as well, who we've had on the show. He writes, from a narrative standpoint, Chauncey is an unusual character as he never really progresses over the course of the story. He has no arc and doesn't really evolve emotionally or intellectually. Yeah, interesting. But everyone around him, because of their interaction with that character, they evolve throughout the story, which is, we see how people evolve.
The story around him evolves, yeah, not them.
Yes. Yeah. And then we'll get to the end. Kirk is already opinion. This end put chills down my spine. So we're going to discuss that step by step.
Yeah, the end was also quite special.
Yeah, but the end, and I'll tell you why that also gets back to the show and why it connects back to the show for me. But we won't jump the gun too much there. In this movie, it's not intentional. Again, Chauncey is simple. So he makes a statement and he leaves all the space in the world for interpretation to happen, not intentionally, but that's just the consequence. So this is, again, taking them up when they're at the dinner table with Ben Rand and his wife, where Chauncey makes another statement, and then look at how the space that's left there, where it's uncomfortable space, but through uncomfortable space, the conversation evolves.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed, Chauncey. A productive businessman is a laborer in the vineyard.
I know exactly what you mean, Ben. The garden that I left was such a place. But I don't have that anymore. All I have left is the room upstairs.
Oh, come on now. Wait a minute, Chauncey. You've got your health. For God's sake, man, you can't let those bastards get you down. You gotta fight. I don't want to hear any more from you about that room upstairs. And that's where I'm going. Too damn soon.
It's a very pleasant room, Ben.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. That's what they say anyway.
So we didn't lead into this, but since he was thrown out of the house, the only room that he actually has is the room upstairs. So the fact that he interprets room upstairs as being in heaven is the humor in that gag. And that's, again, one of these moments over and over again where the person is projecting onto them because they think there's more insight there than there is.
Yeah.
Where I see, I've often said on our shows, if you want to be a good guru, then you have to be able to say very, like, broad statements
And I am.
Well, maybe not I am, but like the room upstairs, and just and then keep quiet. And then let everyone else create. And you'll see, like in the Bible or in things, that there's a lot of what do we call them? Fables. They'll mm-hmm. tell stories. And then everyone from that story derives the meaning that they derive from it. So fable telling for me is another one of these techniques that one uses to create people to have their own experience and then project that the experience mm-hmm. they had was insight from the other when it was actually their own insight. So I can read you a story that you would say, wow, that's so insightful of you. But actually it was insightful of you to find the meaning that you took out of the story. Hmm. Yeah. What do we have as a comment from Kirk? When you get there, curious about your feelings regarding the outtakes at the end. Yes. The outtakes at the end of this film were, I laughed hysterically because I realized how hard it would have been to have made this film as straight as they did. This film and the way that they made it as a non-comedy comedy means that you have to watch it and they don't make a slapstick Jacques Cousteau sort of experience. So you're actually having an interior experience where you're like, oh my God, this is so bad. You're cringing. But at the same time, it's a revelation that you realize it could go this far. And as we mentioned a second ago, say a Trump presidency, it has gone that far. We know that Trump liked to watch TV, and that's where he got his information, and that's how he fed it back, and he used simple statements, and he got people very actively projecting a lot of insight into those statements. So yeah, I think Bolalong shared something else. Communication like that, I don't like. Maybe that is why I don't find religion exciting.
Yeah. Fables.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a problem with fables, Bolalong. I think fables, in a way, are a great way for a story to be shared and that other people can derive the meaning they have. I think I'd rather have that rather than someone be prescribing to me what it is they think I should know. Yeah?
You mean imposing?
Imposing, yeah. If I had my choice, right? That a lot of times when they talk about business or success in life, they'll say, know your story. Or know how to articulate your story. Hmm. And in some ways, I think that way of storytelling is a way to help other people with their simplified ways of wanting to see the world understand you. So if you simplify your story, people, like, you know, when we say, what are you? Well, I'm a contemporary viewer of how you see the world and explaining, you know, give you a visual representation of that. And basically, or someone says, what are you? A photographer. Like, I mean, like either one is going to create, someone's going to be like, what the hell do you do? Or they, oh, okay. Now I understand you, right? That's the, yeah. Now the question is,
operate a camera.
Yeah. So if you kind of say I'm a photographer and you specify what makes that special or unique, that's obviously, I think in my own experience, the benefit. I think Bolalong keeps sending. So I don't.
Bolalong is very active today.
He's.
I don't like to ask myself what it is a person is talking about.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I'd be interested just to ask Bolalong a question. Did you like the film or not? Actually, just a straight yes or no. And if you did or didn't like the film, why? And I asked that for a reason because to some degree. A lot of the things I've seen Bolalong, who, as we all know, is one of our most active viewers, listeners, he really dislikes when people don't specify or they don't articulate themselves in a way that they can be seen, you know, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to beliefs and forcing others to have belief systems. So in some ways, I could imagine that this film was quintessentially about somebody sharing stuff so vague that it could be interpreted by anyone differently. But in this case, it was interpreted to the benefit of Chauncey Gardner. Yeah. Let's go to the next item, which is the subject is guru and enlightenment, which are two things we've also discussed quite a bit here.
Mr. Gardner, do you agree with Ben, or do you think we can stimulate growth through temporary incentives?
Well,
As long as the roots are not severed, all is well. And all will be well in the garden.
In the garden?
Yes. In a garden, growth has its season. First comes spring and summer, but then we have fall and winter. And then we get spring and summer again.
Spring and summer?
Yes.
Then fall and winter?
Yes.
I think what our insightful young friend is saying is that we welcome the inevitable seasons of nature, but we're upset by the seasons of our economy.
Yes, there will be growth in the spring.
Well, Mr. Garner, I must admit that is one of the most refreshing and optimistic statements I've heard in a very, very long time.
So this, again, plays on the same theme. And just to be clear, for those who haven't seen the film, this is Chauncey Gardner speaking to the president of the United States. So it is, again, when we speak in metaphor, it's so easy to be interpretive.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that as someone becomes more and more like a spiritual advisor, they'll often be speaking in metaphor.
So are you saying that all spiritual talkers use it as a technique?
I'd say a lot do, yeah. Yeah, the technique of speaking in this higher level of abstraction and letting other people find meaning in it for themselves. Mm.
I noticed you cut a piece where he's shaking the president's hand.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very uncomfortable, very long shake.
Yes, that was I would have loved to kept that scene in, but it felt like it was too long.
Yeah. It stayed in my mind that those moments can also be projected on as someone that, and he also called the president with the first name.
Yes. Yes.
So it's
because Ben Rand called the president by his first name. He also called him by the first name. Yeah.
And because there was no emotion in it, it was like, oh, he's one of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was you saw it put the president off when he announced and said, hey, hi, John, and then held his hands very long, looked at him in the eyes. But in a weird way, that was what was simple about Chance. And yet it was interpreted as
a strength.
A strength. And that, again, plays to this, that simple can be interpreted however it is, right? The one thing I found interesting is that they'd often say simple-minded. They didn't call him stupid or dumb, or they just called him simple-minded whenever they would describe him. So this comes now to one of the scenes that you liked, which we both liked, which was coming to the woman who we saw in the first scene who was taking care of him, who told him she knew that he basically never left the house, never been in a car in his life, just watched TV. Now she is at home watching TV, and then she sees him on TV after knowing that he's an absolute simple-minded person. We won't call him idiot. And then this is the scene where she then sees that, and we just see that experience here.
I realize this might be an extremely difficult question for you to answer, Mr. Gardner, but do you feel that we have, in your words, a very good gardener in office at this time?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yes. Yes. Some plants do well in the sun, and others grow better in the shade.
It sounds as if we need a lot of gardening here.
We certainly do. Yes.
It's for sure a white man's world in America.
It is possible to be flooded in one part and the other.
I raised that boy since he was the size of a piston.
Of the gardener.
And I'll say right now he never learned to read and write.
No, sir. Had no brains at all.
Areas
that stuffed with rice pudding between the ears.
It is the responsibility.
Shortchanged by the Lord and dumb as a jackass.
Plant a sun loving.
Look at him now.
In the shade of a
yes,
high
sir.
Wall.
All you gotta be is white in America to get whatever you want.
Before we break.
Gobbledygook.
What was the last thing she said?
Gobbledygook, you know, just because that's just gobbledygook. Just so in that way, it was that hit me like it hit you. Is that if you watch the whole movie, could they gotten away with this gag if it was a black man doing? And it's less likely. They did the same thing in Trading Places, at another 80s movie, which I don't know if you've seen it or not. Eddie Murphy was in it. Yeah, great movie. But in this way, the way that he made it all the way to the president, it would have been harder, I think, to have done it in a way that you could get away with it like this. Like the simple-mindedness that we could project onto this white entity as having more insight than they maybe have. I mean, in some cases, you see, for instance, like an Indian in the opposite, right? Remember there was a movie on Netflix, which was Kamada, I think it was called, something like that. Similar to being there, it was an Indian American guy who put on an accent. He put himself in a robe and he acted as if he was a spiritual guru. And all of it was a documentary. It was a real movie. It was a real documentary, and he basically acted out being a guru and everyone believed him in this group.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty intense. So the last kind of scene is him going up to the front, taking off his guru clothes and speaking in an American accent where he pretended and there was this funny, funny moment, which I thought, even now I get a little bit tingly talking about it. There were two people. Some were resentful of him because they felt betrayed and lied to and mocked. And others felt, wow, this was the biggest lesson he could teach me. Everything I projected onto him was false. Mm-hmm. So in some people, it was weird. The gift he gave them was to see through that everything you see is just projection. So whatever you thought I was, I'm not.
Incredible.
And it was really curious to see those two very, very, very different reactions to it. But can you imagine the people that felt betrayed? I mean, that would have been a hard pill to swallow. So another big theme on our show is to question everything, right? That's one thing when we're here and we're interacting. A lot of times the guest might be someone that we're not altogether comfortable discussing all the topics with, but we'll stay open and we'll try to like uncover what is it that I don't understand here yet? What is it that intrigues me? Mm. And this scene in this movie was one of the most powerful scenes of any film I'd ever seen. Because up until the point you watch this, you think that Chauncey Gardner or Chance the Gardener is a simpleton. You just assume, but then they screw with your mind on this last scene in a way which was just, it like knocked me on my back on my feet. And this is the last scene where Ben Rand has died. They're at the funeral and they say that they believe that Chauncey Gardner is in the best position to become president of the United States because he's gotten on the TV and everyone thinks that he's such a wise man. And now as they're carrying that casket away, this is what Chauncey does. He leaves the funeral for no reason. Of course, people are going to interpret it as something insightful. And then this is what you see happen.
I do believe, gentlemen, that if we want to hold on to the presidency, our one and only chance is Chauncey Gardner.
When I was a boy, I was told that the Lord fashioned us from his own image. That's when I decided to manufacture mirrors. Tranquility.
well-deserved rest. All the aims I have pursued will soon be realized. Life is a state of mind.
So that I felt tingles in my whole body now. Now, the reason why is because as I watched that, I now was forced to thrust everything that I assumed about the movie back on myself. There was no answer. Was I watching a movie where he wasn't an idiot the whole time and he had all this insight? And now, is he walking on water because he doesn't even know you can't walk on water? So he just walks out. You know, like at the end, there is no answer there. Kirk Scott writes, is it making him a Christ figure? Right. And that's kind of the mind fuck is you're now looking at this character you've assumed is the idiot all this time. And he's walking on water in a weird way. You're like, wow, have I seen it wrong all this time? And I think that was one of the most powerful moments in a film is when the director or the writer has you question yourself as you're going through the experience. And that was what I thought was so incredible about that scene. And again, going back to all our shows, there is an aspect which I always want, which is to be questioning everything. So this film forced you to question everything because it didn't resolve. It didn't give you, there's no being there too. No. You know, the fact that he died a year after filming that scene was, you know, already the one of the last things he would have ever filmed, which is quite amazing. So now, as Kirk also mentioned, we had a nice message from Miss DeLinde, who he's such a long message. We can't put it on because you won't be able to read it.
Interestingly, recently in an online meeting about a Sufi-oriented text on being servant towards God, which I interpret as being servant to nature and to humanity, I mentioned being there and connected to the recent developments around us, around the U.S. presidency. And now you come along with this movie, which I haven't thought of and didn't see.
Since I saw it when it was originally in the movies, exclamation point. So we know he's old because you had to be. I made the analog of the president of being a gardener, which is showing up in your clip. Yeah. So I think it, a lot of times when a director comes out with something so far ahead of its time, it takes time also to understand how insightful it was. And it took me time to understand how insightful it was. There were things in it I appreciated. I didn't understand till much later, or at least now, how I interpret them, of course.
Because even if you look at the first scene now where the black woman's saying, the master is dead.
Yeah.
Like, because he doesn't take things seriously or project bad or good, then it's like, ah.
Yeah, you make the assumption. I made the assumption at the beginning, oh, he's an idiot, you know, or he's disassociated. He has no connection with what's going on around. Those are all the assumptions you're making. But if you look at it on one level, he's gone. Oh, he's gone. I mean, that would be, you could just say he was at peace with everything that is, right? And Bolalong says, I'd never viewed Chance as an idiot, but the people, they are hearing ways that they're hearing the ways he's not saying. So he didn't see it as clearly as we also may have interpreted, right?
I interpreted in the beginning autism.
Oh, yeah. This is then when they have the outtakes. This, I watched this and I would laugh hysterically as I was watching this. And I was laughing hysterically because I think at the end, that's when you realize how hard it would be to make a movie where you're trying to read lines out as if you don't know how funny they are. Like, think about if you're playing a straight character and you have to speak words which are so absurd and you know they're absurd, but you have to say them with a straight face. So this is, and I find this is beautiful as an ode also to Peter Sellers, who, as we said, died not all that long after filming this scene, the last movie he was ever in. So we're going to play that right now. This is the outtake. So this is after the film, actually.
What was the message, Mr. Gardner?
Now get this, honky. Sorry, carry on.
Okay.
Speed.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. What was the message, Mr. Gardner?
Now get this honky. You go tell Raphael that I ain't taking no jive.
Sorry.
That I ain't taking no jive from no Western Union messenger. You tell that asshole if he...
Did you see me gone? No.
Yes. You tell that asshole... ain't taking no jive from no Western Union manager. Messenger. Manager. What am I saying? Sorry. From no Western Union messenger. You tell that asshole if he got something to tell me to get his ass down here himself.
Oh, shit.
Margaret. What was the message, Mr. Gardner?
It's slightly long, but I will try to remember it. Now get this honky. You go tell Raphael that I ain't taking no jive from no Western Union messenger. You tell that asshole if he got something to tell me to get his ass down here himself. Then he said that I was to get my white ass out of there quick or he'd cut it.
That's it.
I bet they had a lot of fun doing
that. Oh my God. They must have had a time. I mean, if you look at it, they were almost making a comedy for themselves. Because as you know, Bolalong said that he laughed twice during this movie. And he said, in the second time I laughed in the movie, and he laughed hilariously. And that was, I couldn't stop laughing at that second because it was almost like all the tension that you mentioned that built up, I now saw and understood the tension that they must have had in filming it. Because they don't make movies like this. The people need to be entertained. They need to be slapstick. There needs to be gags. There needs to be things that keep you engaged. This movie is internal. You have an internal experience. Yeah. And in that experience, you're kind of having to like process things and think and like, what the hell is going on? And that was now I see why I didn't get laid till I was 19. Because I lived, enjoying the cerebral shit. Yeah. So that's kind of it. This is for me, when we'll work, I'll often have that Chauncey Gardner in the back of my head saying, wow, people are projecting a lot onto him. Or even onto me, which I'm really sensitive to, right? Like we all have the same understanding. We just need to look inward to find it. And I could play the guru part, but it's not serving you because in the end, if you look inside, you'll figure it out for yourself. If you think I or anyone else can give you the answer, then you'll get stuck in the Chauncey Gardners of the world only to realize that actually they didn't really know the thing you projected into them. But you were too scared or insecure to find that in yourself. And so that's the core message that for me, and it's also...
That's pretty deep, Mr. Shadoff.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason why I also like to do the show is to find people who are highly respected and also to have discussions with them on the show, which are just very normal, very simple, easy, comfortable. Like no one gets to get off as being special. We are just here sharing an experience and going through our own interpretation of it. And then there's movies like this, which elevate and sort of give me a really big punch in the face. Like, wow, yeah, this teaches me a lesson that I wasn't even aware of, let's say.
Bulilang says, this is a great movie. It's even greater after I've heard what another person saw in it.
Yeah. It's almost like if you need someone to share the experience of why the movie's so good, probably it wasn't that good a movie. But yes, I
am. No, but you actually explained why.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything for you to hold on to.
No. No, that's what I want from a – I don't want – I find that filmmaking today is there to entertain the viewer, to keep them engaged in a way which is more like a playful, what's the gag, what's the funny statement, and not to create constant tension and thought-provoking and keep you thinking, what am I missing, what's going – and that tension is what I really – there's another film that I watch with my friend every New Year's Day called Babette's Feast. And – absolutely, very little dialogue. It's a foreign film. We watch it every year. And there's a quiet beauty where you get to have an internal journey, which is your journey to have that isn't being spoon-fed to you. And that's what I found with being there, was very much in the same sort of genre. Mm. So I'd be happy, Bambos, for you to come on and for us to do an hour on your favorite movie.
Oh, God.
But thank you for entertaining this with me, right? I really appreciate you letting me force you to watch a film and discuss it for an hour. This was new. We've never done this before. So this is a treat, right?
It felt like we should have a YouTube channel reviewing movies.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think we'd win at that one. Mers leaves us, says, thanks for the interesting viewing and discussion, guys. Thank you. How do you pronounce that name, Bambos?
Mace de Lind.
Is it Mace? Mace. Oh, nice. Interesting. We should know that. Thank you, Mace. It was really nice to have you. I'm happy that you got to enjoy that.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Bambos. I'm happy that, again, I've imposed something on you, culture that doesn't necessarily come to you easily. No. So what'd you say?
I said, yeah.
We'll see you next time on
A Wonderful
Chaos. Bye.
It's a wonderful chaos.
We like it that way.